And now it's time for the Daily Douchebag Pledge.
Two douchebags and a microphone pledge. I, Joe or Jane listener, hereby promise to download every show. I, Joe or Jane listener, hereby promise to grab family members' phones and download the show from there. I, Joe or Jane listener, hereby promise to go to public computers and download the show from there. I, Joe or Jane listener, hereby promise to laugh at all the unfunny jokes. I, Joe or Jane listener, hereby promise to lie to all my friends and tell them how good the show is. And finally, I, Joe or Jane listener, promise to visit Montrose, Missouri to take advantage of the power plant, campgrounds, and junkyard all within its quarter-mile radius.
Here at Two Douchebags and a Microphone, we don't stand behind our journalistic integrity. Go ahead and assume we got the story wrong. At least we admit it. Not like all those other guys, we can and will lie if it makes the story better.
Swimming in toxic masculinity and wiping their ass with politically correct wash rags. Two douchebags and a microphone invade your ear holes in 3, 2, 1.
And now, Deep Thoughts with Mark.
Do you tell when you're out of invisible ink? I may never know.
Somewhere in the heavens, your great Grammy Gertrude is crying because her little Bebo is listening to this film.
Our constant pursuit for a real knee slapper. It's strange insults from an alien. Real hilarity.
May your grandmother always intrude your thoughts at the last minute while you are masturbating.
Hi all, this is Chicago. I am the most dangerous city in North America. You can't touch me.
Oh yeah? This is Kansas City here. Hold my beer, bitch.
Now it's time for pickup lines from a loser.
There's something wrong with my phone. It doesn't have your number in it.
Two douchebags and a microphone.
We talk Kansas.
Hey everybody, this is Two Douchebags and Microphone. Thank you for joining us tonight. I am Mark.
And I am Rob.
Alright, well Rob, how was your day?
It was alright. Found out we're going back to 4 days a week. Things are slow, so...
But as I remember, you kind of liked 4 days a week last time because you got paid like half of it, half of the day from the state.
Yeah. We get work share for that one day. Uh-huh. Through unemployment. So, it equals like, they don't give you your full benefits. It equals like half a day pay. But hey, you get 3 day weekends, man.
Yeah, 3 day weekends
half
and half of your pay.
And you get paid for a half a day. So.
And Rob, you're really
I'm
resilient.
I'm only losing like $60 a day,
Yeah, you're really resilient too. You grew up in the old school like I did. Go cut a tree. Go mow a lawn. If you need extra money, there's ways to get it. And you know what? And that depends. You know, if you're doing fine on the 4.5 day gig and you get 3 day weekends, then who cares, man, you know? But, you know, I was always like this whenever things got slow on my, when I was in the union and everything. I'd be like, I'll go solicit some lawns and mow them on the days I'm off. And I always came out better. I'd make like $200 mowing a few lawns, and I'd be like, cash, I'd be like, hell, I'd come out a lot better. So, yeah, I mean, you know, people that grew up like that, you know, the people, a lot of Missouri guys, stuff like that in the Midwest, you know how to make a buck if all else fails, right?
Right.
Yeah, so, anyhow, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, Rob, I saw right before we got on this program here, the Dallas Police Department have issued 8 counts and warrants for our boy Rushy Rice. Not looking good. Not looking good.
Eight warrants.
Eight counts. Well, it's one warrant, but I kind of misspoke.
Right, right. Yeah, but there's eight counts.
I was trying to make it more dramatic, but anyhow, you know what?
Well, it's still dramatic because that's technically 8 warrants.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I really didn't. Yeah, you're right. The Dallas Police Department on Wednesday issued an arrest warrant for Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Rushy Rice in regard to a serious bodily injury crash that took place March 30 on a Dallas highway. Rice, 23, is facing 8 counts: aggravated assault, collision involving serious bodily injury, and 6 counts of collision involving injury stemming from a chain reaction collision that involved a Lamborghini and that Rice was driving in a Corvette and 4 other vehicles. The crash left 4 people with minor injuries, police said. Theodore Knox, 21, who was determined to have been driving the Corvette, has also been issued an arrest warrant and is facing the same 8 counts, according to a police statement. The passengers in the vehicles will not be charged per DPD, Dallas Police Department, and Rice and Knox are not in custody at this time. The investigation is ongoing. The NFL has been closely monitoring developments in the incidents. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport reported per a league spokesperson. Following the crash, Rice and Knox left the scene. Rice was leasing the Lamborghini and owns the Corvette, so he owned the Corvette that the other people were driving, and he was leasing a Lamborghini. So Rice posted on Instagram that he's taking full responsibility for his role in the crash. Well, why'd you leave then? But anyhow, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, you know, why'd you leave? If you're taking full responsibility, you would have been there going, yeah, it was me. I was being bonehead, and I'm sorry, guys. You know what? Take me in, whatever you got to do. We'll get it unraveled. I understand. You people here, I'm sorry. I was being stupid, you know. I did a stupid thing, you know. Hand a kid all that, you know, all that cash, and stupid things will happen. This has actually turned out to a little bigger can of worms than I thought at first. This is actually getting very ugly pretty quick. You know, these are things that's going to get him suspended from the league, and I don't know how long. I mean, there's 8 counts on this guy now.
He can do jail time.
Yes, that's the other thing I was getting ready to go into. And he could do jail time. And you know what? He deserves it. I know he's a great football player, but you know what? Somewhere we got to put our foot down and say, listen, you're going to be doing stupid shit like this, you got to pay the price. We got to quit glad-handing these athletes all the fucking time. The reason we're doing this is the reason they keep doing it. You know, they, like I said before on an episode in the past, Javon Belcher got a pass that night. And I believe he killed his girlfriend. I'll have to look it up. And himself in Arrowhead parking lot as a result of it. They had him stopped that night. They could have stopped him. You mean to tell me they didn't know that something was going on? I don't know. I wasn't born yesterday. I believe that they knew something was going on. But because he was a football player, they're like, okay, well, just go home. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, I promise I'll go home. And meanwhile, he goes over to his girlfriend's house. This is the way I see it. This is my opinion. This is what I think. You know, if I'm wrong, I apologize to all parties, but it looked to me like Javon Belcher got a pat on the back and a little smack on the ass and said, all right, buddy, you just go home and everything will be okay. And then look what happened. So doing this for football players, acting like they're gods, is complete bullshit. And what Rushy Rice did, he deserves punishment, and I don't care what it is. You know what? We'll figure it out. We'll get another receiver. People are replaceable. So, Rob, you got anything to say on this?
Hey, guess what he's got coming? He does.
Yeah. There's no two ways about it.
That's all you could say about that. I mean, you know, You do the crime, you do the time.
Absolutely. So, yeah, Rob, that's pretty cut and dry to me. So, whatever he gets is what he gets. I guess he'll have to go in front of a judge. Isn't that the way it works? The civil trial.
Oh, yeah.
The civil.
Oh, yeah. There's civil. There's going to be criminal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the criminal part of it will go through before a judge, and the civil part of it, he will go through a jury, probably, unless they settle out of court. But those people are pretty pissed off. I don't know if they're going to. And they're pushing for prosecution on the criminal. Do what?
I was just going to say, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, his career is probably over. Just as he was getting started.
You know what?
To be honest. You know, I mean, who's going to want him after that?
Let me think of a good way to put it. Michael Vick. Michael Vick was picked up by...
Good point.
Other than Andy Reid. Andy Reid gave him a second chance.
Yeah, but Michael Vick did not injure other human beings.
Yeah, but he killed dogs. Brutally. You know what? I'm just going to go off of that right now. I'm stopping right there. Okay. I'll just put it like this. I'm going to cap it off right there with Michael Vick shit. Okay. He was granted another chance by Andy Reid, and he did very well. He didn't break the law anymore, and maybe he has remorse. But to me, I don't know. There's some things that you do. Rashee Rice did not kill anybody. He didn't kill any animals. He wasn't some part of some big dog ring, nothing like that. So, is this one of those things where the punishment is going to fit what happens to him in the league? Like, if they say he goes to jail for 5 years, then obviously his career's on hold at least, right?
It's going to have to be at that point.
Yeah, well,
he's in prison. He can't. They're not going to give him work release to get out and play games.
No. You know. So what I'm saying is do you think that the Chiefs are going to lay low and just see what happens and just be numb?
That would be their best bet.
Yeah, they're just going to keep quiet.
Just move on.
Yep.
You know he's going to be delayed. Just go ahead and move on.
Yeah, and here's what I imagine him saying right now.
And then go off what happens to see whether he gets to come back or not.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to go, we're going to let the justice system do its job, and then we're going to assess everything after the smoke's cleared. I think it's going to be a deal like that. So, anyhow, not smart, not good. He needs to be held accountable. So, anyhow, I guess we can move on from that. I had an interesting day today. My Jeep has an issue in the rear end axle. It's still on a bumper-to-bumper warranty. So I took it to a guy that we knew, and he was like, take it to the dealer. This is beyond me here. And he's a good mechanic. He's been doing it a long time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I took it to the dealer, and I'm like, hey, I'm saying, you know what, this is going on here. And I was waiting for him to give me a call back today, but they have not, which they didn't even get a diagnostic in, which really irritates the piss out of me, because the way these dealers do it anymore, to me, is almost immoral, because they just take everybody in. They take your car in, and then whenever they get to it, they get to it. So if there's 500,000 people out there with a car, they'll go, oh, yeah, come on in today at 10 o'clock. And then they just throw them all in a pile. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
So my car is in a pile waiting to be looked at of something I think is obviously a defect. So meanwhile, my life's on hold, you know. The bumper-to-bumper tells me I get a rental car. Well, I don't get the rental car until it's diagnosed. So while they have that in the shop there, I'm just sitting here with my thumb in my ass, and it pisses me off. And here's the funny thing.
Oh, that would me too, man.
Here's the funny thing, Rob. My car is in the shop there, and the guy from the place, I don't think, knew that. He called me up wanting to buy my Jeep, which has been going on for quite a while, because Jeeps are in, like, one of the hot, I guess, because of they have problems getting certain parts and everything. So people are getting older Jeeps instead of buying new ones. And Anyhow, so he called me up today and said, hey, I'm offering you money. I go, well, I go, there's a little issue. It's in your shop right now, buddy. Waiting to be looked at. Oh, well, it gets out. I go, yeah, when it gets out, we'll assess it then. Until then, I don't know what to tell you. There's nothing I can do. So, you know, it pisses me off that they can, like, get on the phone and call you up and go, hey, you want to sell your Jeep? But if it comes to looking at your Jeep, it's like, no, well, you got to wait your turn. Oh, anyhow, that was a complete bullshit. So, anyhow, we'll see what happens. Very irritating at the very least.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, let's see here. Let's go into some stories. I'm pretty much done with that. That is what it is, and what do you do, you know?
That's your rant for the night.
Yeah, that's my rant for the night. But it'll all work out, you know. Like I said, I have a bumper to bumper, and I'm relatively sure that, you know. Well, you know what? No, I'm not even going to say that. You never know when it comes to insurances, and especially warranties.
Right.
Yeah, so, yep, they always try to find a way out or something, so we'll see what happens with it, so. Okay, well, this is what happened. You know, a guy went through an earthquake while he is in the middle of a vasectomy up in New Jersey.
Oh, that would suck.
Yeah. Justin Allen, a 33-year-old father of two from Horsham, Pennsylvania, got a whole lot of attention on social media Friday when he posted about an experience during an earthquake, I guess it's Pennsylvania, not New Jersey, sorry, that hit the East Coast.
Still, just that happening would suck.
Yeah, it would. With a preliminary magnitude of 4.8, and let's just say it struck while he was in the middle of a very delicate procedure. And what he put on his X, formerly his Twitter, a fucking earthquake happened in the middle of my vasectomy. Allen explained to HuffPost on Friday that he had a 10 a.m. appointment scheduled at a urology surgery center in Huntington Valley and that it started out totally normal. I was thankful to have a surgeon that walked me through every single step of the procedure, Allen wrote. But about 10 minutes into the 20-minute surgery, the whole room started shaking.
Oh my God.
Imagine that shit. The guy's there, okay, and he's down there in your area with a scalpel or something like that, and all of a sudden the room starts shaking.
Hopefully he's smart enough to back off.
Well, I'm going to go to the rest of it right here. Allen reacted to the rare event like other East Coasters by reaching for a logical reason for the surreal situation. At first I was wondering if there was a close to a train station or if there was something else that could be causing the room to shake like that, he said. Either way, I didn't initially think it was an earthquake because I'd never really felt one before. And I agree with that. You know, the little tremors that we have around here, whenever I feel them, I'm always like, oh, that must be a train riding rough down the road or something. I never think earthquake, do you?
Nah.
In California, they think earthquake because they're used to them. Here,
yeah,
we're like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, there must be a train or, you know, you're looking for a semi, like, hauling ass down the road or something. But then the surgeon addressed the elephant in the room. When the doctor said, is that an earthquake? I still thought it was a joke and that he was just trying to lighten the mood, Allen said. After a minute or two, when things settled down, he resumed the procedure. Oh, good. Okay, he stopped the procedure. That's the main thing, right?
Yeah.
And we all laughed about it.
Well, hopefully old boy wasn't sitting there wide open bleeding.
I guess not. You'd think he would say that, like, hey, man.
Yeah. He was evidently safe.
He said, I definitely thought it was something funny and for my friends to laugh at, he said, and it blew up. His wife, Bridget Allen, even snapped a few photos of her husband outside the facility and couldn't help but post them on X as well. And you know what? I agree with him. Something like that happens, post it. It'll go viral, and then you'll get stories written up in the Huffington Post like this.
Hey, now you have a podcast talking about you.
Oh, yeah, Two Douchebags and a Microphone.
Yes. Yeah.
Not just any podcast, Two Douchebags and a Microphone. And
worldwide.
Yeah. So, can you see any of the new numbers on your phone at all?
No. I'm stuck back about 6 months ago. Mine will not update on my phone. I'll have to get on my son's laptop or something.
Do it when you get a chance. You're going to be pretty impressed, I can tell you that.
Man, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like still waiting for someone to go, ha, 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 I did it. I had a way of tricking the system to give me all those hits. I don't know how people can just all of a sudden find your podcast like that. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, just everyone starts downloading it. It's still weird to me, you know, because this has been such a slow-going process, you know. Anyhow, the second half of my day, Topher and I got to hang out. Well, okay. First off, we went to Stroud's, and we went to Valerie's work reunion, and nice. And it was at Stroud's Chicken. And I will send you the picture, but there are so many famous people who have been through Stroud's. You know, it's famous fried chicken, and
right. It's great. Awesome. That's the best chicken in Kansas City, in my opinion.
It is. And the cottage fries were just out of this world, dude. Anyhow, and the gravy was really good. It's real homemade gravy, you know, with the chicken grease and the flour and the butter and all that stuff. All that stuff is ready for you. So it was an excellent meal. And I started looking around and snapping photos of the famous people that were there. And they signed the plaque and they put the plaque there. Eric Clapton was there. Did you know that?
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, Eric Clapton, and right above him was Rush Limbaugh. And I mean, there's a lot of. Whether you like.
No. Actually, Rush was all right. He was all right.
One of the greatest broadcasters ever, in my opinion.
Yes.
Look, this is nothing political. You look at his.
I just was not big on talk radio.
I always was. I always admired the form, and Rush had a way of delivering a message, not quite Paul Harvey-ish. To me, Paul Harvey was the greatest broadcaster
ever. That's the talk radio I liked, was Paul Harvey.
He was amazing.
Paul Harvey.
His dramatic pause will never be duplicated ever again.
Oh, man.
Because
his own son couldn't do it.
No.
His own son took it over, and he couldn't do it.
Well, it's kind of like this.
Not like his dad.
Billy Graham's son, Franklin Graham, is good, but he's not Billy Graham. Paul Harvey's son is good, but he's not Paul Harvey. There's something about guys like that that change the whole industry that it can never be, you know, it can never be duplicated because they just had that something. So to me, Rush Limbaugh wasn't quite Paul Harvey-ish, and I'm not talking politics at all. I'm not talking left or right or nothing at all. I'm talking about broadcasting in general and his ability to cut through, talk directly about what he's doing in an entertaining manner while having emotion, but at the same time spewing facts. He was just amazing at it. And he had such a smooth way of doing it, and he would cover all these other areas that was just like all this ancillary stuff. He would combine it all in a ball. He was just so efficient at that he was one of the best broadcasters ever. And I was just, you know, I was just admiring Eric Clapton, Rush Limbaugh. And there's so many other ones there. I was just like kind of astounded at the people that went through there. And this is the one in Overland Park, the newer one. But they got all the stuff from the 95th Street one, or 85th Street. You know, 85th and Truce, the little...
That's the one I'm used to.
That's the one that George Brett used to frequent about every night when he was in town, slamming beers and, you know, taking pictures with people and all that. So that was the most famous one. It was like just, I don't know, just a...
That was the one that was down under the bridge, wasn't it?
Yeah, the floors were uneven.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. You go in there, and it felt like the foundation was about ready. Everybody loved it. It was just a cool place. And anyhow,
and everybody was so nice when you went in too.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a "Hi, may I help you?" without a "Hi, may I help you?" without scaring the piss out of you. You know what I mean? Gates and Sons. As soon as you walk in, "Hi, may I help you?" and it's like, "Son of a bitch!" It's like, "Dude, I just walked in. Yeah, you can help me, but give me a minute." You know, They didn't quite do that, but they were very welcoming. You know, they'd smile, yeah. Hey, how you doing? Welcome to Stroud's. And then they'd always give you a little suggestion, which I always loved. They're like, you know, today is their chicken fried steak special, and people love it. You know, it's got a crisp golden crust. You have that with some cottage fries, dump a bunch of gravy on it, dude. You got a perfect meal. And you're like, okay, sold. I'll take three.
Yep.
So, anyhow. Anyhow, the meal was really good. That was great. And then Topher and I went to the city market. And I told you where we used to broadcast from when we first started the city market in that little corner. They took away the chairs because those were the Daily Kitchen chairs, right? And Hope, the lady that owned the Daily Kitchen, retired. So she took her tables and chairs away. So Topher and I bring our own chairs, foldable table and foldable chairs. We bring them in there and we sit down in our area where we used to have coffee and have coffee there. And it's awesome. People come by and like look and go, they figured out a way around it. So anyhow, we had a really good chat and we're just sitting there, you know, just talking about stuff. But remember Miss Golfenstein? The lady used to walk around screaming at the walls?
Yes, yes.
Probably schizophrenic, I'd imagine. Well, we don't know what happened to her. She has not been around a long time. I don't know if she died. She got put away somewhere or something. But Ms. Golfenstein, we decided is her name. We don't know what her real name is, but we just call her Ms. Golfenstein. I don't know what happened to her. She disappeared. It was so... We have her on so many shows, walking by screaming at the walls.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I'm sure people thought it was a bit, but it wasn't. She really walked by screaming at the walls. And I think there was something to us being there that made her do it more. Like she could see we had a microphone and was broadcasting. And I think in her mind, it was kind of like, I need to scream louder, you know, or something like that. But she was always entertaining. You never made eye contact because, well, number one, you were scared to. You thought she might take a knife and jab your eyes out. Number two, you didn't want her to linger. You wanted her to scream and walk on like she always did. And she had one wall over there at the city market that was she was particularly mad at for I don't know what reason. But that wall right there got so much abuse, that wall probably is going through counseling right now. I'll tell you. She hated that fucking wall, and I don't know why. But she screamed at that son of a bitch and screamed at it and screamed at it. All the other walls she yelled at. But that wall right there, I don't know what it did to her.
She just yelled at the other ones.
Oh, she hated that wall.
But she screamed at this one. All right.
And that wall was the closest wall to us.
Oh, my God.
We were sitting there with our headphones on going, oh, my God, I already have tinnitus. Stop already. So
I know. you could go back in the old episodes and listen to her.
Oh my God, yeah. But at the same time,
it's hilarious.
It was something that you couldn't duplicate. You know, you couldn't get an actor to walk by and do that. It was something spontaneous. It was just like, it was just magic that happened down there at the city market on a regular basis. Like the people that would come up and talk to us had the best personalities. You know, they were funny, they were witty, they had stuff to add to the show. That little corner there is magical, and today when we're sitting there talking, it was no different. It's just magical. All the stuff that we came up with. That's why I like to go up there and write for the show. I get so many ideas there. It's you know, and a lot of it stems from my childhood. You know, for a little portion of my childhood growing up, I grew up in Northeast Kansas City before my dad decided that it was getting too stupid there and moved us out south. So. We used to go down to the city market every weekend because we're only a couple miles away from there. So, you know, in my earliest memories, I remember going down there. We bought a cat tiger from there. It was my sister's cat, but it was a cool cat, you know. And I remember bunnies there, Easter's, you know, where we went there. And there's bunnies and eggs and stuff like that. I mean, it's just, you go there and buy watermelons. I hate watermelons, but, you know, everyone else loved them. Oranges, you know, it was just... There's something about nostalgia there for me, too, besides just being a cool place to sit there and write. And I think it just makes your mind, like, just, I don't know, have those endorphins, I guess, that, like, really work overtime to make you more creative, I guess, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not being a doctor. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. And anyhow, so I found out something else. Part of the studio here, I'm making it like really just my own area, man cave, right? Because Part of creativeness, I believe, is what you have around you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm a real sugar snob. Everybody that's listened to this program more than a couple of times knows this. I'm an admitted real sugar snob. Whenever you get Coca-Cola, the only way to get real sugar Coca-Cola, cane sugar, is Mexican Coca-Cola, which comes in bottles. Comes in 12-ounce old-fashioned bottles that still look like a woman, the shape of a woman.
Wow.
Those bottles. Yeah. And you can buy them at Costco.
The kind of ones
cheaper.
We used to get money for.
Yes, the ones that you used to take back, the returnables. So I've been looking at these old Coca-Cola machines that have the glass, you know, where you pull the bottle out, but it has to be a 12-ounce bottle.
Oh, you are.
Well, I can't, and here's why. I found out some stuff doing some research. It's not the money or nothing like that. What it is it's the weight of it. You have to have a fork truck to do it. They are so heavy that you have to have like a lift gate or something like that to move it up, and you have to take the lift gate to your porch to bring it down, and then you have a hell of a time trying to move it in the house because they're that heavy. So, because I talked to someone that had one, and he's like, yeah.
I have an idea.
What's that?
Get you some pipe and wrap some carpet around it so you don't ruin your floors.
Ooh, yeah.
Use them as rollers.
Yes, that's a good
idea. That's how I moved bundles of steel into my saw area. I set it down on pieces of pipe, and then I can just roll it right in.
That's extremely clever. I like that. And that steel pipe, I know
but
what kind of you use.
But to save your floor, wrap it in carpet.
Yes.
Or something.
Well, the hardwood, it would tear the piss out of that. So, yeah, you're right. I would have to.
And pray God you don't have to go downstairs.
No. Actually, the man cave / talk is cheap studio is right around the corner from the living room. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
And then I had these really cool colored stick-on lights and with a remote control. And depending on what mood I am, I turn on different colors, right?
Anyhow,
when I was downstairs jacking up the I-beam to level the house, it leveled this wall so much that all of my little stick-on lights fell off, and I can't get them back on now.
Anyhow,
you know, we're already at a half hour, and you barely talked about anything, so... why don't we take us a break and then you come back with something you want to talk about. That sound good, Rob?
Sounds good.
Alrighty, I promise to shut up about everything.
No, man, you're good. You're good.
Well, I mean, my irritations make me spot on sometimes. You know what I mean?
Right.
You get irritated enough and then you just want to
trust me, I know.
Yeah, you want to talk and just let it all out. That's what I'm doing, I
guess. Trust me, I know.
Yeah. So, anyhow, all right, we'll be right back. Thank you, everybody, for listening to me vent. Unless you know what, you probably already turned it off and went to someone else. So, we'll be right back.
No bat light here. These idiots just show up and hope for the best.
Brick Shithouse Energy Drink. That's right, Brick Shithouse Energy Drink. Make that little girl chew off your balls. You want to fuck shit up? You want to fall asleep across America? Brick Shithouse is for you!
Please enjoy Brick Shithouse Energy Drink responsibly. It's not readily available anywhere because of liability issues.
Have you ever wondered where something came about? Have you ever looked at something and said, I wonder what the origin of that is? Well, so have we. That's why we give you the origin of...
The origin of Coca-Cola. On May 8, 1886, Dr. John Pemberton served the world's first Coca-Cola at Jacobs Pharmacy in Atlanta, Georgia. The drink was served as a tonic for common ailments.
Next up, things overheard in hell.
Hell will be your main course forever.
Oh shit. What's that over there?
Oh no. It's the island of horrible jokes.
Microsoft Office. I
since we haven't a budget here at Two Douchebags and a Microphone, here's a random guy on the street to promote our show.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddy. I love listening to Two Douchebags and a Microphone, and I get all my pertinent information from them. They are incredible, and I love them so.
Introducing Rob Rad's new book, How to Track Your Enemy by Scent. That's right, smell your enemy before they get you. Order this gem now and get a free virtual tour of Rob's secret bunker in Camdenton, Missouri. Also receive a free copy of his new book, How to Clean Raw Sewage for Food. Tomorrow morning, while grinding your coffee beans for your double mocha latte, remember to not get your genitals caught in the grinder. It really hurts. And who can afford plastic surgery? Stay safe, everyone.
And we are back. This is Two Douchebags and a Microphone, and I'm Mark.
And I'm Rob.
Okay, Rob, like I promised, you are going to talk now, and I'm going to sit here and listen.
Yeah, well, last night, after WrestleMania Night 2, I promised I had a story about Cody Rhodes when he went backstage.
Oh, real quick, I got a program. This pertains to that episode you're talking about. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but while I'm thinking about it, that's probably going to have to be released after this episode because I got some buzzing and stuff in there really bad, and I have to clean it up, and it's going to take a few days. Yeah, I don't know how. I don't know what happened, but I'm just letting you know it's not going to be in order, and WrestleMania stuff is not going to be in order, and I apologize. But unless I can figure out a way to clean it up really quick, this one's going first. So go ahead. I'm sorry, Rob.
Okay, well, it's still a story I have. Cody Rhodes received a very meaningful gift from the WWE leadership after his big win against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 40. The American Nightmare took part in the media scrum after finally finishing the story. He was asked why he thinks people resonated with his journey so much. Rhodes mentioned how it was a father-son story that a lot of people connect to.
I would agree to that 100%.
Well, when he went backstage, Cody Rhodes also revealed a very special gift he received from WWE officials once he returned backstage from winning the Undisputed Championship. I know that, and this is quote, "I know this isn't what you asked at all, but something that I wanted to share. I came to the back and Bruce Pritchard and Triple H and Nick Khan handed me this watch, which is the same watch that my dad had pawned so that I could go to acting school."
Wow.
"So the level of investment and responsibility that the company just put in my hands, I hope I can pay it back, pay it forward, honored times."
Wow.
"My sister Teal will tell you all about angel money and that beautiful gold Rolex. He told me if I ever won the world title that I could have it. Just the other night I inquired about that watch. Come to find out he had sold it so that I could drive to Los Angeles to chase a dream."
Wow.
"Somehow they chased that watch down and bought it back and gave it to Cody."
You know what, Rob? This indicates a couple of things to me. Cody is a damn good person. They love him. You know the love and cherishment
it's
that would
family
take.
Family history. It's family history.
Well, I mean, from Dusty Rhodes to Gold Dust to who else? I mean, the American Dream on down. I mean, they are wrestling royalty. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of like the Von Erichs without all the Von Erichs, right? I mean, they're like the royal family, one of the royal families. You know, a lot of the other ones that were big back in the day, like Harley Race, they were one-offs. They were one. Bruiser Brody was one. I remember one in particular. Remember Hercules Hernandez?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was a one-off. There was the Romero brothers, Mark Romero, and what was his brother's brother's name?
I've watched wrestling pretty much all my life.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm starting to get back into it because of you, Rob. I'm starting to, like, kind of start watching it a little bit more now. But I was going somewhere with this, and I just got derailed by talking about the old names. Oh, okay. The love they have for this guy is just enormous. He must be one of the best dudes ever. To go and hunt down this watch like that and find it and get it to him is so much dedication and loyalty and love. It's unreal.
Yeah, and it was a watch that his dad promised him.
That is amazing.
That if he ever won a championship, he could have it. Well, his dad pawned it, so he'd go to acting school, which you kind of have to have to be a wrestler, to be honest.
Now, did Dusty Rhodes die broke or something?
I don't know, but, you know, well, he had more than just one kid.
Yeah, okay, maybe so.
You know?
I mean, I was just wondering, I would have, here, I'm not like, taking a dump on her or nothing. What I'm saying
no.
It surprises me that he had to...
I wondered that myself.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of them died broke because they really didn't get paid that much.
I remember Bulldog
worked a security job.
And then inflation, and you really don't have a pension, you know.
No, you don't. And also all the injuries and the medical care and all that.
Right,
because
right,
Bulldog
right.
worked, I think, at Harris for many years, and that's how I met him. Nice guy, really nice guy. Until his death, I think it was Harris he worked at. He was a security guard there. You know, so that would indicate...
I've always heard he was a great guy.
Yeah, that would indicate that he did not, you know, he probably didn't have a whole lot of money. But then again, maybe he was just having something to do. I don't know. You know, he could have just been like, I'm getting pretty bored sitting around the house. Well, here's a way to talk to people and stuff and, you know, feel worthwhile or something in your retirement, I guess, maybe. But I don't know. Anyhow, I was just glad that he was a really nice guy, you know, because sometimes you meet your people that you looked up to when you're younger and they're dicks, and it just sucks, you know, because then you don't play. You know, you ever have that happen and you don't think of them the same after that?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard for me to get over whenever I get snubbed and treated like shit. Ozzy was really cool when I met him, and it was out in front of the Intercontinental now. I forgot the name. No, it was Intercontinental then, too, on the Plaza. It was raining, and believe it or not, he had short hair. So he must be wearing at that time, he had been wearing a wig. And he was carrying his son, Jack, who was a little kid at that time. And anyhow, I go, Ozzy, I'm not going to ask for an autograph or nothing. I just want to say hi. I love your stuff, man. You're great. And he goes, hey. He goes, thank you very much. He asked me, he goes, what's your favorite album? And I told him, and I think I'd said Blizzard of Oz. He goes, yeah. He goes, that was a blur, you know. And he went into a little story. And then he said, well, I got to get my son in here. Thanks. He was really cool. And he actually talked
to
me.
Dude, that'd been great.
Yeah, he was very,
that
very
cool. That would have been great.
And then Sharon came off the bus, but she walked the other way. But I wasn't going to bother her because I'm kind of afraid of her. So, so anyhow.
Yeah, she kind of is the boss.
Yes, I was like, I'm not interrupting her.
Ozzy likes to mingle. She really don't.
No, so. No. She looked at me like she had a place to go and a purpose. And, and I was like, nope. I'm going back to the car before these guys throw me out because I don't have a room here. I don't have enough money. Because you know damn well, right? What the fuck's that long hair doing here? Oh, he's chasing down Ozzy. Go out there and throw him out. So I did them the favor. I'm like, okay, I'm going to see myself out. So, okay, I got a, little story for you. Let's see, where is it? Oh, okay. Okay, remember I was talking about, I think it was last episode, and no one heard it yet, but about the dog that took a dump, the support dog that took a dump, and it made the air flight go back?
Yes.
This is about a guy who has body odor that, like, really it was so bad that people couldn't stand it. So, anyhow, this lady came up with tricks that you can do for a really... a stinky person, and anyhow, I guess there's stuff you can smell, and I'm trying to look for. Hello, Rob. Okay, he'll be calling back. Rob just dropped out for some reason.
The apocalypse just happened. You don't know what to do. You don't know where to go. We can tell you what you can eat.
Okay, it's post-apocalypse, and you're walking down the barren wasteland that used to be a city. You find an old can of beans lying in the middle of the road, but you do not have a can opener. What you do then is you find a patch of concrete, you rub the top of the can for 5 minutes, then you go to the middle of the can and squeeze it, and it should pop right open.
Have you ever wondered where something came about? Have you ever looked at something and said, I wonder what the origin of that is? Well, so have we. That's why we give you the origin of...
Where did podcasts originate? The term was first coined by Ben Hammersley, a writer for The Guardian, in 2004 by combining the words iPod and broadcasting. In 2005, Steve Jobs, founder of Apple, introduced the idea of subscribing to a podcast by building the concept into the iTunes interface. Who made the first podcast ever? 2004, Adam Curry and Dave Weiner are credited with the invention of podcasting. Who exactly did what is up for dispute, but in the end, these are the two guys who got it rolling. The term podcasting was mentioned by Ben Hammersley in the Guardian newspaper article.
Two douchebags and a microphone reminds you that you'll never get this hour back. Sorry about your luck.
And now, Deep Thoughts with Mark.
Let's see. If I identify as a dog and I start wandering around the block without a collar on, could animal control come by and pick me up? I may never know.
This is a voice guy from your favorite podcast, Two Douchebags and a Microphone. People often ask us how they can find us when doing a remote broadcast. One, smell. Go to the city market and start sniffing. Our aroma has been described as a mixture of flea powder for goats, Tabasco sauce, and old sock with dark fuzzy urine. Two, look for the spot absent of patrons. Three, the most telling sign is a crowd of patrons vomiting uncontrollably. 4. Just call us at 816-512-7717.
Our constant pursuit for a real knee slapper. It's strange insults from an alien. Real hilarity.
I would have wished to, but my mom told me to not burn trash.
And after some technical difficulties, we are back. Two douchebags and microphone. I am Mark.
And I am Rob.
Okay, I was in the middle somewhere talking about stinky people. I mean, I work with stinky people, and I mean, it sucks. Okay? And there's this one lady, I was going to go into her article, but I'm going to go into a different article. That lady suggested she has these different... methods of dealing with stinky people, like on a plane, you're like right next to them and you can't leave, and you got like a 4-hour flight and you're just like, they're miserable. And so they do have policies against it, which I'll go into here in a little bit. Like if you smell bad or you're like excessively filthy or something, that they can go ahead and like, you know, say, hey, you got to leave because your smell or whatever is disrupting people. They can do that if they need to. But anyhow, the lady said that they're called like nostril pillow incense. Some, I believe that's what it's called. You'll have to look them up. Nostril pillow incense that you put in each side of the nostril, and it kind of filters the air and makes the air smell fresh and clean. And I guess you can get them online. And that's her best suggestion was that. When I read that, I'm like, that's a good idea. You know, you don't have to smell their BO, and you don't have to, you know, like go through a big ordeal telling the flight attendant, hey, you know, can you move me? This guy stinks like hell or whatever. You know what I mean? So, it makes a difference. Okay. You don't have to tell Danielle Bailu, who was recently stuck next to a pasture with strong body odor, rotting cheese and onion, as she described it, on a flight from the Caribbean island of Curacao to Miami. Oh, my God, that's a long flight. Thank goodness the flight was only a couple hours. Oh, it's only a couple hours? I thought it was more than that. Curacao's down near the tip of Venezuela. I love that island, said Bailu, a travel advisor from Somerville, South Carolina. Being a travel pro, she came prepared. A lightly scented spray bottle of hand sanitizer held the stench at bay during the flight. Okay, there's another one you can do. There's a war of scents going on at 36,000 feet, and it's escalating in ways you can't see. But some passengers are treating personal hygiene as if it's optional. Others are taking matters into their own hands by spraying unwrapped scents. Airlines, meanwhile, are maintaining a double standard for smells. So, the airline policies are a little bit vague, but here's what they are. So there you have two, you know, that hand sanitizer. Some people just, you know, they use the poo spray or whatever. And then the best one that I read was the article that I didn't read because it was too long and went to two different areas, so I chose not to read it. The nostril pillow incense are the best idea because you put them in your nose and you smell fresh, clean air the whole time while they're over there stinking. So I think that's the best, to me, that's the best idea, but anyhow. Okay, American Airlines contract of carriage. The legal agreement between you and the airline says it can refuse to transport persons who have an offensive odor or as such from a draining wound. So, okay, that makes sense. Delta Airlines also reserves the right to refuse transportation when the passenger's contact, attire, hygiene, or odor creates an unreasonable risk of offense or annoyance to other passengers. United Airlines has a similar provision refusing to carry passengers who have or cause a malodorous condition. So, at the same time, airlines have given themselves a broad license to release their scents on the plane. So they have their own scents that they release on the plane, I guess. A few years ago, United reportedly began using a preparatory fragrance called Landing, Orange Peel, Bergamot, and Cypress in its cabins. Delta Airlines perfumed its planes with Calm, Lavender, and Chamomile, whatever the hell that is. Here, I'll spell it out and you guys can get it right there. I don't have my glasses. Chamomile. During the pandemic, airlines sprayed the cabin interiors with chemical cleaners that left some passengers with a headache. And don't even get me started onto the lung fills of fuel fumes that sometimes go through the cabin on takeoff. I've never smelled fumes on a plane. Or I'm talking about fuel fumes. Okay. Anyhow, interesting article. So you get stuck to a stinky person or stuff you can do. And anyhow, Rob, you got something you want to go into?
Yeah, first, you still don't have your damn glasses?
They're in the bedroom because I'm in the middle of this really, really good book. I need to just
pray. You haven't got a replacement pair.
Yeah, so, like, I'm reading the words not in order sometimes because I have astigmatism.
They sell cheaters at Dollar General, dude.
I know, and I'm going to go get them. I'm going to go get them. I just keep forgetting when I'm at a store. And I'm going to put, like, three of them here and three in the bedroom where I read. So, anyhow, I have no other excuse. It's still over in there. You know, I could pause this program and go get them. But I choose to.
No. I don't know what the hell just happened to pause it. But
I choose to fuck up the words instead. So.
Oh, right on. That makes it even better.
Yes, it does. So, anyhow, Rob, we look at you. You probably have your glasses.
Yes, I do.
All right, Rob, you're smarter than me.
I don't leave home without them. I'm going to go to one from Society of Rock.
Okay.
Eight rock artists whose solo careers didn't take off.
Uh-huh.
And this is no order. They're just mentioned.
Okay.
First, Joe Perry, famously known as the lead guitarist of Aerosmith, holds a prestigious position and the Pantheon of rock guitarists. Mm-hmm. His audacious guitar work fueled Aerosmith's best songs, earning the band a devoted following and a place in rock history. In 2005, Joe Perry ventured into his solo career, releasing an album that bore his name. While the release catered to fans with its characteristic guitar-driven sound, it didn't achieve the commercial success many anticipated, unlike his Aerosmith endeavors. Perry's solo project did not resonate widely with audiences, and subsequent albums followed a similar path.
You want to know something interesting about the Joe Perry Project album? Aerosmith actually redid his lead song off there, Let the Music Do the Talking. His didn't hit, but Aerosmith's Let the Music Do the Talking hit.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah. I always wondered about that because his album flopped, but it must be the name and Steven Tyler that carries Aerosmith then, because when they released it, it was actually a hit. So, anyhow, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, and next, Tommy Lee, the flamboyant drummer of Motley Crue.
The flamboyant dirtbag. Sorry.
I'm just reading what you're
playing. I'm sorry. I'll shut up.
Was instrumental in the band's sound and success during the glam metal era. Known for his energetic drumming and electrifying stage presence, Lee took a bold step with his solo career after leaving Motley Crue in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
His initial solo outings on rap metal, a stark departure from Crue's glam metal stylings.
Yeah.
Despite a promising start with his band, Method to Mayhem, Lee's 2002 solo album, Never A Dull Moment, experienced only moderate success.
Okay, here was, you probably know the story on this, but I'm going to clue everyone else in it. I think it was domestic violence that Tommy Lee went to jail for, right? And
I think that.
He went in being a metal guy and he came out being a rap guy. He admittedly didn't like the stuff that they used to do anymore, and he was into rap. And anyhow, his album really had that kind of an influence, and the only people that knew him were metal people, and they weren't buying the album, because it was more of a rap hip-hop album. And that's the story that Motley Crue was giving. Everyone else said that. They said he went to jail, he came out, and he was completely different musically.
I believe it.
Yeah, I think so too, because then after that, you know, like you said, he quit the band, because he didn't like the music, but then he was forced to go back to the band because he didn't like the money being out of the band. Because remember Hole, the group Hole with Courtney Love? Their drummer replaced him for a while, and then Randy Castillo did for a little bit too.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the one that I saw at Sandstone, or whatever it's called now, had the Hole drummer playing. And she did really good, and I forgot her name, but and I know Randy Castillo did it good because he was a hell of a guitarist, and he is also a victim.
Yeah,
he was also one of the victims of brain cancer. What I went into a few episodes back about all the drummers that have brain cancer or had brain cancer,
right,
and passed away, an exorbitant amount of them.
Right.
Yeah. So that was the story about that. Is there any more on that, Rob? Or?
No, that's on him.
No. I mean, yeah. Go ahead. I have more. No, I knew you did. I was talking about Tommy Lee, but go ahead with the next one.
No, I was done talking about Tommy.
Okay.
Next up, Mick Jagger. As the iconic frontman of the Rolling Stones, Mick Jagger's name is synonymous with rock and roll swagger and charisma. Despite the Stones' enduring legacy, Jagger's solo career has been met with mixed reactions. Starting in the 1980s, his solo albums were well produced and featured skilled musicians.
Michael Jackson.
But lacked the cohesive energy and innovative spark of the Rolling Stones' work.
I disagree. The State of Shock that he did with Michael Jackson was a phenomenal song.
And that was one song, though.
No. The rest of it was garbage. But he did have one really good song with Michael Jackson.
Right. Well, that's what this is about.
Okay.
They may have a good song, but that's about as far as it goes.
That is with his stuff. I agree.
I mean, you see what I mean?
Yeah. I got what you mean.
And but then when you have names like this, and you're from a big band, you're expected to live up to a certain standard.
I imagine the production that that song underwent, you know. I mean, imagine the writing.
Yeah. Okay, next, Miss Grace Slick. The voice that helped propel Jefferson Airplane and Jefferson Starship to psychedelic fame.
And Starship for one album.
Do what?
It was Starship for one album. They went to Starship. Now they're back to Jefferson Starship.
Yeah. Embarked on a solo career that never quite matched the impact of her group projects. Her solo albums offer glimpses of her powerful vocal abilities and charismatic presence, but lack the innovative and collaborative spirit that marked her time with the Airplane and Starship.
Yep. Her solo stuff was horrible. Unlistenable, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know how she could have put out such horrible music to me. I mean, it must have been Paul Kantner writing all the music in Jefferson Starship or whatever they're called now.
Yeah. Okay, next we have Roger Daltrey. Known for his dynamic voice and commanding presence as the lead singer of The Who, tried to establish a solo career with varying degrees of success. Despite releasing several albums throughout the years, Daltrey's solo work did not reach the commercial or critical acclaim The Who.
Yeah. But The Who was so big, I mean, I'd never expect him to be as big as The Who. But the thing is they did flop. But here's my question, Rob. Now, you know The Who pretty well, right? Pete Townsend,
yeah.
Roger Daltrey. Pete Townsend's solo career went really well. Roger Daltrey's flopped. Wouldn't you have thought it had been the other way around? The voice of the Who? Yeah.
Roger had one hit, if I remember right.
Yeah, and it wasn't that big either. I mean,
and I can't remember what song it was. But
well, that tells you how good of a hit it was. You know, it wasn't that good because no one remembers it. So,
Pete Townsend had stuff off a couple albums, you know.
Oh, yeah. He's, you know, My Love Opened the Door. Amazing.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of other songs, too. I mean, yeah, I would have never guessed as Pete Townsend that would have a bigger career than Roger Daltrey. But Roger Daltrey's song, I don't know, you know. I guess the writing obviously wasn't as good, and Pete Townsend's a guitarist. So maybe it's just as simple of Roger Daltrey being the lead singer and not really knowing how to write music, where Pete Townsend did. I don't know. So, anyhow. Yeah, that was surprising to me.
Okay, this one won't be surprising to you.
Okay.
David Lee Roth.
He did have a hit album.
Yeah, departure from Van Halen in the mid-1980s marked the beginning of a solo career that captured some of the flamboyant energy he was known for, but failed to sustain his former band's commercial success.
No, he could never match Van Halen. Of course not. But Crazy from the Heat and Eat 'Em and Smile registered very high on the charts.
Roth's solo work included well-received tracks and collaborations with the lead guitarist, yet often his releases felt more like novelty acts than groundbreaking musical statements. His rendition of California Girls showcased his penchant for showmanship over substance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. What I'm saying is I didn't think the writing was particularly good. Steve Vai was excellent guitarist, of course, but I would agree with that. The songs didn't really have an impact on anything. They weren't the best written songs, you know, except for the cover tunes like California Girls. So I get that. But what I'm saying commercially it did really
well. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, there is one song that I really liked from his solo career.
Uh-huh.
And that was Yankee Rose.
That was a really good song, and that was Steve Vai at his finest.
Yeah, that was a very good song.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really good song. But I get what they mean. Okay, number one, any solo artist is not going to match the career of Van Halen. And when they took Sammy Hagar, who already had a very faithful audience, and combined it with Eddie Van Halen, you're not going to match that. Okay.
Yeah, you ain't going to get close.
No. But, I mean, if you want to talk about hit-wise, I mean, David Lee Roth actually did very well for a few years. The thing is when he dropped off. I mean, after Steve Vai left and Billy Sheehan and some other guys, he really didn't have anything for his name after that. I mean, and he really didn't send out that many albums after that either, really. So, I see what they mean, but he did do really well at first. But as far as going against Van Halen, hell no, he's not going to beat that. I mean, you know. So, anyhow, is there more?
That was on David Lee Roth.
Yeah, that's
right. I got two more.
Okay.
Next one. Honestly, I'm shocked. I'm a little shocked to see this one on this list.
Okay.
Dean, the bassist and lead singer of The Police, carved out a successful solo career that diverged musically from the band's new wave roots. His solo work, deeply personal and often introspective, explored jazz, classical, and world music influences while Sting achieved financial success and critical acclaim with hits like Fields of Gold and Englishman in New York. Some critics and fans felt that his solo material lacked the edginess and urgency of the Police's best work.
Go ahead.
Well, I really don't know how I feel about this. Go ahead.
Okay. He had a good career. I mean, he did very well on his own. And, I mean, it took some doing to get him to go back to the Police because he did so well. He wasn't going to. You know, he was going to stay solo. But as far as, like, let me think of the way to put it right here. Sustainability hits. Sting doesn't have that "Don't Stand So Close to Me," "Every Breath You Take." He doesn't have those iconic songs, right?
All right.
So, if you look at it from that, no, he did not make the impact, or was he nearly as successful. But if you want to talk about being successful, he was a lot more successful than a lot of people.
Yeah, he's made a hell of a lot more money.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I get what they're saying, but at the same time, I think it's a little bit misleading. And do you have any more on Sting, or...
No, that was it on Sting.
Okay.
And the final one?
Uh-huh.
Roger Waters. Following his eponymous departure from Pink Floyd, Roger Waters pursued a solo career that continued to explore the thematic and musical complexity he had brought to the band. Waters' solo albums, such as The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking and Amused to Death, were conceptually ambitious, addressing political and existential themes with his characteristic lyrical destiny and sonic experimentation.
Okay. To me, the only people that really stayed in touch with Roger Waters at all and bought his stuff were the really die-hard Pink Floyd stoners. Other than that, nobody really gave a shit about him. As a matter of fact...
Yeah, you had to be a Roger Waters fan.
Yeah, you had to have been like one of the really big stoners that thought that Pink Floyd was in another dimension and beckoning you to come there. I knew people like that. So, you had to be like really, really, really into them to really keep in touch with the stuff. The same with David Gilmour's solo stuff. It just didn't hold the same water, of course. But I can tell you this. When you go to a Roger Waters concert, you don't hear Roger Waters songs. You hear Pink Floyd songs. And there's a reason for that, right? Everyone goes and takes a dump or piss and gets a beer while a Roger Waters song comes on. Or you can look around, the stands are, you know, the people, the seats are empty, and everybody's up there like fucking taking a piss or buying a beer. So, yeah, I think they're right on that one. Absolutely. And I would like to see sales-wise how bad Roger Waters did to Pink Floyd. So, yeah, I agree with that one 100%. So,
That was good on that.
That was good, man. I like that article a lot. Thank you, Rob.
I found that one at lunchtime today.
Very good. Oh, I love the way it compared stuff, and I mean, and we had, you know, I liked our, you know, we kind of broke it down and kind of discussed it, and I think we pretty much got through it pretty good there. I mean, yeah, I think they were dead on with a lot of them, and some of them, like the Mick Jagger one, he did have a couple of hits, I can't think of them now, in the 80s.
It was so damn long ago.
Yeah, I can't remember. But he had a smash hit with Michael Jackson. That thing was number one for quite a few days, if not weeks.
Yes.
But I guess they don't count the collaborations, maybe, because that is Michael Jackson you're working with, and Michael Jackson was so huge then, so he could have came out with me and made a hit, you know?
Right.
So, but yeah, he needed the Michael Jackson rub to actually get that big of a hit, I guess. But he did do good, but I don't think he ever toured as Mick Jagger, did he? I think he always toured with the Stones.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he always toured as the Stones.
Yep. Real quick, I got an article here if you have some time.
Yeah.
Okay. You know Gen Z, how they splurge? Groceries.
Yeah.
It's a new thing. Splurging once meant spending money on buzzy restaurants, expensive vacations, and designer clothing. These days, what's considered splurge-worthy falls into a more humble category. Groceries are shaping up to be the top spending priority for younger generations, a February report from McKinney & Company found. The firm asked over 4,000 people from baby boomers to Gen Zers about the categories they intend to splurge on this year. Groceries ranked the highest for millennials and Gen Zers, outpacing restaurant, bars, travel, beauty, and personal care, and apparel and fitness altogether. Millennials are also becoming parents, which means they spend more on themselves, their partners, and their children. It's a notable shift from 2018 when older generations like baby boomers and Gen Xers still spent more money on groceries than millennials. So now it's shifted. Millennials are buying more on groceries, and Gen Zers are not. Gen Z, meanwhile, say they often choose high-quality snacks and beverages, which makes for expensive grocery bills. One 23-year-old Gen Zer told Business Insider by text that he spends about $130 on groceries for a week and a half, fancy sodas and drinks, and random snacks at Trader Joe's. Well, that explains it right there, doesn't it?
Trader Joe's. You go to the high-dollar places, you're going to spend more.
Yeah, look, Trader Joe's is great, but you leave there with your wallet lighter, without a doubt.
I honestly could... Truthfully, I cannot tell you. I've never stepped foot in a Trader Joe's, so I don't know about that.
You got the idea.
I just know the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a higher dollar.
Yeah. Trader Joe's amount for the bulk of the bill. He also said he spends $35 on protein bars. There we go again. Protein bars are ridiculous, the price of them.
Go to Walmart, you'll find everything cheaper.
Oh, yeah, you can get the off-brand of protein bars, like a third of the price. And I can't think of the name of them. What the hell is the name of those at Walmart? And they're actually really good. I've had them before, and they're about the same. Actually, I think the cheaper ones from Walmart taste better than the leading brand to me of the protein bars. So, the success of the canned water brand Liquid Death is an example of young people's willingness to spend money on flashy food and beverages. The brand shot up to a valuation of $1.4 billion thanks to a recent round of funding, Forbes reported. Peter Pham, an investor in Liquid Death, previously told Business Insider that part of the brand's success comes from its appeal to younger generations. The healthy food and beverage space has historically been a stale category filled with boring brands. Flem told BI, Business Insider. The creators a lightning in a bottle moment for disruptive brands who know how to tap into culture and talk to Gen Z and digital natives. So, anyhow, all generations are feeling the pinch of inflation at grocery stores and for goods and services in general. The typical American household would need to spend $445 more a month to purchase the same goods and services from a year ago. Did you hear that? $445 more dollars a month than a year ago. That's outrageous. So, anyhow, and that's from Business Insider. So, okay, Gen Zers are choosing, and millennials are choosing groceries over, I guess, pedicures, manicures, travel, massages, all that stuff. Who'd have guessed, you know? Hello, Rob? Rob, did you hit the mute button?
Yeah, I did.
I was Sorry. Wondering you hadn't said anything in like 2 minutes. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Okay, well, at least
no, now, actually, I made a few comments.
They didn't come on here.
I know that. No, I see them putting their money in food. I really do.
I do too, because it's instant gratification.
I would rather spend more in food than other BS right now anyway, so.
And you know how I am.
I'd rather eat better, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't buy garbage, but at the same time, I don't go to Trader Joe's every other day and spend it on high-dollar stuff either. I don't see any reason to, or Whole Foods or nothing. I would rather go on vacations and stuff like that, but, you know, that's just me. I see where that's coming from, though. It's instant gratification. They don't envision themselves ever having enough money to go on a vacation, so they're taking what's there, right?
Right. So well, things are getting so damn expensive. You know,
you probably had a comment.
I really
for the
can't afford to take a vacation. You know,
you probably had a comment for the $443 more dollars per month.
Yeah.
Is that not outrageous?
That's
unbelievable.
I see it though.
Oh, I believe it completely. Absolutely, completely believe it. It's just, it's horrible, man. They don't talk about inflation being that bad, but it is. It's horrible.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then we just keep spending and spending, which does us no good. But we tell dick jokes. So.
Yep.
Anyhow. So, all right. We are well over an hour again. Shall we go ahead and put a bow on this bitch and wrap it up?
Yeah, let's put a boat on it. Tomorrow's my Friday. I'm back to 4 days a week, so.
Well, you know what? Enjoy it, because when you go back to 5 days a week or even a Saturday, you're going to look back and go, man, I sure miss those 4 days a week.
Actually, I'm one of those. I'd rather work 7 days a week if I could.
I'm looking forward to working part-time here in a couple of years. I'm looking very forward to that, because I have so many other things and interests that I want to do. It really kills me going to work, and it's not the work part of it. I love what I do now. Well, I love what I did before, too, even though it doesn't sound like something you love. I really did love it. I just have so many other interests now. I would like to get to them. I would like a little bit more time to play guitar and get better at guitar. I want to learn a full song all the way through and not just riffs. I want to learn some lead solos that I can play. I mean, there's stuff on my list that I really want to do, and I can't do that full-time job and all the other stuff that I have and a podcast and everything, you know. So I'm really looking forward to part-time work. So anyhow, but I get where you're coming from, because a couple of years ago, I would assume working 6 days a week because, you know, I was like, you know, I never thought I was ever going to get to a podcast like I wanted. I never thought I was going to get, you know, I just didn't see myself, like, really getting some of the stuff that's been on my list, you know?
Well, I've watched my family members.
Uh-huh.
Once my family members slow down, they go downhill.
Really? Well, but
I don't want to go downhill. I want to stay around for my grandkids, you know?
Yeah, no, I know. And I want to watch my grandkids get married, too. I mean, you know, without a doubt. You know, I want to watch every one of them get married. I want to see that special day. I want to see them graduate. You know, I want to see them graduate high school, college.
And I probably only have like 20, 25 years left, you know, if I'm lucky.
Don't think like that. Don't think
I know. That's what I'm saying, if I'm lucky.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, if you put on...
That put me 75, 80, you know?
Okay. Well, you know what, Rob? You never know. You never know, man. You might live...
Right. I never know. My great-grandma lived to be 96.
Yep. You know, and you can be that person, too. You just got to find... To me, I think it's like this. And things happen to people. There's car wrecks. There's conditions, cancer, heart disease, and stuff like that. But what I've noticed is, it's not necessarily a job that you have, but it's a purpose that you have in your head.
Yeah.
You know, like there's like some volunteer work I really want to do. There's some stuff that's very, very, very special to me that I really want to get to also. But like I said, I have too many other things going on, so I can't do that. I think that some of the stuff that I want to do volunteer work for will be the most fulfilling stuff I've ever done in my life. I really do. And so,
It always is.
Yeah.
It always is. I've done some volunteer work, so yeah.
Giving is such a unique thing, because this is what I found out in life, and you can call it a higher power, you can call it God, you can call it just world justice, or whatever you want to call it. I call it God. But whenever you give, you have so much more coming back to you besides knowing that you helped somebody, besides knowing that you made a difference, that you did good in the world. You know, there's so much more to it on a level that, like, you just don't know until you start getting into it, you know. Anyhow, I want to do more of that, you know. I want to, and not just because, you know, oh, it's going to make me feel good, but because it's, like, it's the right thing to do, you know. I think we're, like, in a lot of ways, we were meant to help and guide and push and bring up each other, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and I think when you do that, you're really hitting your real purpose in life. That's the way I view it, so... Anyhow, you know what? You need to get to bed, and I could go on and on about this stuff, but I'm not going to. So, anyhow, Rob, thank you again. You had great stuff. You brought great stuff again. Dude, you're just blooming right in front of my eyes, dude. You're just becoming fantastic, and I thank you.
I'm trying.
Well, it's apparent. It's apparent you're trying, because your articles are fantastic, dude. Every one of them you bring up, it turns my head. I'm like, wow, how the hell did you get that? So, yeah. So anyhow, you got a unique
ancient Chinese secret.
Calgon. Only certain people will get
you're
that.
You're old
one.
School if you know that one.
Yeah, that's Calgon, take me away. Remember, first it was take me away, then it was ancient Chinese secret.
Yep.
But anyhow, Rob, you're blossoming in front of my eyes. You're doing awesome, and I thank you, and I thank you for being a part of this mess. Oh, in a couple of days, I'm gonna send you some information, probably via email, okay? I want you to look it over very carefully and get back to me your thoughts on it.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it is, but I don't want to say anything, so anyhow.
Oh, and by the way, hi, Grandma Opal. Oh, hi, Jimmy.
Thank you, Rob. Hi, Grandma Opal. Hi, Jimmy. We love you guys. Dodge City, Kansas. Rah, rah, rah. So.
Need to hear from you. Let you know you're still alive.
I haven't checked my emails. Hopefully they sent me one. I need to get to them because I'm sure they're piling up. And also, when you write me, I want to know if you guys are still under that horrible drought in Dodge City or if it's been raining. Because the wheat fields were burning up around there, and anything, corn, anything they could plant. It's been a horrible dry spell.
We had rain today, and it moved like from that way this way, so.
Oh, maybe so. We had no rain. We were right on the edge.
Well, they're further out in Kansas. It would have been yesterday. They probably would have got their rain.
Well, they got it. Oh, well, when they listen to this is when they'll probably send it, if he's going to send it, if Jimmy's going to send it. So.
Yeah.
Anyhow, well, hopefully he will. All right, Rob, have a good night. Thank you, assholes. Good night.
All right. Good night, assholes.
Oh, no. Looks like the show's over, kids. Mark has explosive diarrhea and can't afford a wireless mic. Fear not, assholes. They'll be back invading your ear holes soon.